Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tang. And today we're talking about Wyatt Earp, the movie that came out in 1994. It's a Western slash action movie directed by Lawrence Kasdan. And he also, I think, helped with the screenplay. It stars a whole bunch of people. I mean, I had to search far down that cast list on IMDb in order to get to Jim Caviezel. But I guess that just means this is early in Jim Caviezel's, fame. But the primary star is Kevin Costner. He plays Wyatt Earp. And apparently Wyatt Earp had, 12 brothers and sisters, because Lyndon Ashby plays Morgan Earp. David Andrews plays James Earp. Gene Hackman plays his father, Nicholas Earp. And then all of them have wives. Jim Caviezel's Warren as a grown-up. Dennis Quaid plays Doc Holliday. Jeff Fahey plays Ike Clanton, which is, a criminal that he is an adversary. Joanna Goeing plays Josie. Mark Harmon, is that the NCIS guy? He plays Behan, who, becomes the sheriff. Michael Madsen, who I know from Reservoir Dogs, plays Virgil Earp. Catherine O'Hara, Home Alone lady, plays Allie Earp. Bill Pullman plays Ed Masterson. Who plays Bat Masterson? Tom Sizemore plays Bat Masterson, their brothers. Some lady named Isabella Rossellini plays Big Nose Kate. Annabeth Gish plays Urilla. And Taya Leone, plays Sally early in the movie and doesn't make another appearance after that, I don't think. But I'm certain that I left out many notable actors. But this movie's just too fucking long, and has too many people in it, I'd say. So is there anybody else that you think might come up?
No, I don't think. There's other famous actors I don't think they'll come up that much.
Okay. So the summary of this movie, and I kept it short because it's ironic. Over 3 hours long, this biopic highlights the life of Wyatt Earp, famed outlaw turned lawman of the American frontier in the late 1800s. And, it's holy shit. 3 hours and 10 minutes. Okay. So, where to begin with this one? I feel like in the context of this movie, we should start probably at Wyatt Earp's conception, because. Oh, okay.
We have a segment, Winging It, with the Dallas Wings. Dallas Wings faced off against the Los Angeles Spark in Los Angeles. Paige Beckers dropped a 40 bomb on them. 44 points in 36 minutes. But Dallas unfortunately lost 80-81. The rest of her team added only 36 points. And in the 4 minutes she was off the court, they lost by 13 because she was plus 12 in her 36 minutes, shooting 17 for 21, including 4-4 from three and 6-6 from the free throw line. So really a disastrous performance from the supporting cast that sort of put a damper on one of the best nights of her early career by Paige Beckers. Obviously, there's still some injuries. Lee Uro, Arike Ogbowale, still out with knee injuries. But, so a great night from Paige Beckers. Unfortunately, not a great night from the rest of the team. So Dallas still struggling. I think they now have been eliminated from the playoffs. So we will maybe be following some other teams once we get to that stage of the season. A team that sort of has been facing some unfortunate luck. There's three teams in the league with only 9 wins. And of those, they have by far the best point differential at, minus 6, which obviously isn't great. But the other teams are minus 9.4 and minus 10. So it seems like, they've sort of deviated, they've sort of gotten a little unlucky record-wise relative to the point differential, which is, I think, is commonly described as a better predictor of, teams' relative strengths. So I don't know. They don't make it easy.
Okay.
Any thoughts on that game? Games
that, I didn't catch it. I'm sorry. How many games do they have left?
How many games do they have left? That's a good question. And I think it's six.
Okay.
So six games left. There's
no playoffs at this point, right? Because they needed to win out.
Yeah, they've been eliminated.
Okay.
They're on a pretty big... I think they've lost their last six games, and they've lost, it looks like, 11 of their last 12.
So I guess that taints Paige Buckers, because, you know, she's probably playing somebody who's not starting their starters. Is that the case?
What do you mean?
They're not playing their A-team. They're playing their bench people, just so they can save their A-team for the postseason.
Well, I mean, the spot is still... Well, they didn't win. So it's not any kind of victory.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, Paige Buckers, 44 points. That feels like a good game for her. I know they didn't win.
No, I mean, yeah, it put a damper on the night because they lost. I mean, the Spark on the bubble of playoffs, they, you know, a game and a half back.
Oh, so they did care. Okay. Well, good for Paige, then.
They need to win. And it really just the rest of the team just came up a little short and that they didn't do anything. So that's rough.
All right, well.
But, you know, we'll be back with the next game. It looks like who are they taking on next week. They are taking on, let me see. Looks like the Sun, the next team they play. It's sort of funny that we have the Connecticut Sun.
Oh, Connecticut gets sunshine too. Nice.
Yep. Sun. I feel like Phoenix is more associated with sun than Connecticut, to be honest. But who knows? So,
stay a little bit. Yeah, or Florida.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, most places, honestly. Connecticut, I just don't think it's high up on the list.
All right. Well, yeah, that's our, what'd you call it, winging it? Dallas diversion? What's going on here?
Yeah, winging it was what we were calling it.
Winging it. All right, good stuff, good stuff. All right, back to Wyatt Earp. So where are we beginning with this one?
I think we were going to start at the beginning.
All right.
When
at the beginning,
Civil War is happening, I guess?
The Civil War is happening. Wyatt Earp is 16, I don't know, and he wants to fight. So he wakes up early in the morning and, like, takes rifles outside and just fucks around and pretends like he's shooting. All right?
Yeah. And then he tries to run away to join the war, because his brothers have already gone to join the war.
Yeah, but his father doesn't let him. And then Virgil and, I guess, is it James?
I thought it was James. James is, like, injured pretty badly.
Yeah, so, like, Virgil says, "Hey, Wyatt, it's good to see you." And Wyatt's like, "Where the fuck is James?" And Virgil's response... He says, like, "Oh, he's right here with me," but he says it like very in a sad tone, as if it's just James's dead body.
Yeah. So I don't think we mentioned, but he's pulling a cart behind, like, just Virgil is riding in, you know, on the horse or whatever, is pulling the cart behind him. And at this point, what's his name? Wyatt hasn't even seen James. So he's like, "Where's he at?" And it's like, "Oh, he's in the cart." And you're just like, "Oh, is he dead? Like, is that what's happening?" And it's just like, "No, he is sitting, lying back there quietly, because it looks like he got shot up pretty good."
He's not even conked out, like, sleeping. He's not drugged up on laudanum or anything, or, like, pain pills. He's 100% lucid. He just refused to sit up and say, like, "Hey, Wyatt, good to see you," you know, until Wyatt came over. It was a weird, unnecessary scene. The first of many unnecessary scenes. So what, then they're having dinner, and Gene Hackman is like, "Hey, you know, this family has a house here, and we have a life, and we have 80 acres of corn that we're responsible for, but we're a pioneering family, so we're going to head out west. We're just going to abandon all this farmland." Right?
Yeah, and the rest of the family seems to not want to do this. And also, yeah, Gene Hackman's like an old man. It's like, It seems like this is a thing he does regularly. It's just family's kind of pissed off about it because they're like, why do we have to uproot our lives yet again? When it's not like they're like destitute and they're like going to look for new opportunity.
Yeah, they have a pretty good farm.
And it, like one of the, I think one of the sisters stays because she's like, well, I'm marrying some local boy. And they're like, well, if you want to, you stay behind. It's like, we'll never see you again. Like, I don't know. It's, yeah.
So they're, yeah, they throw their stuff in a wagon and, you know, I don't think they light their house on fire. I don't think they do that. Hopefully they sell it. But yeah, I mean, when they're out on the road, or the plains, yeah, like Wyatt goes to town to get some supplies for the family. He sees a gunfight and it makes him sick.
Well, can we go back for just a second?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So like when you sell a house in these times or whatever, like it's not like you put your money in the bank, right? Like, do you get just like a big bag of cash for it?
Or, I guess
like,
so.
Are they just taking a loss on like, are they just like abandoning the home at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Possibly.
Like, it seems like this would be financially ruinous just to give up a nice home and farm.
I agree, yeah. But maybe they, did they come from money? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yes, hopefully they go and he's in town. He's trying to buy some stuff.
Yeah, he's tasked with getting some supplies. He sees a gunfight where two people
Can we go back just one more time?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So at the dinner table, did we talk about Gene Hackman's speech?
No, we didn't.
Gene Hackman gives this speech, which it seems like he gives almost every day, where he tells them, nothing matters as much as blood. Everyone else is strangers. Don't trust anybody but your family. Everyone else is not valuable. And this is something that it seems like Wyatt internalizes pretty deeply throughout the movie.
Yeah. And the way Gene Hackman delivered the line is as if he'd never told them. He's like, oh, I may have mentioned this like a decade ago. And then all of their responses are, yeah, you told us this like 1,000 times. And it like, makes you wonder if Gene Hackman like has like dementia. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like he tells them every day and they're like, yeah, we know.
And they're going to let like, this dementia guy uproot their whole family and move them west? Okay.
He built it up like it was this big thing. And they're like, yeah, no, you tell us that constantly. It's like all you tell us.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe different times because he has younger brothers that are like, I don't know, 6 sitting at that same table. And then there's, you know, 23-year-olds. So like maybe he's forgetting which kids he's told. And that's why he keeps bringing it up. And it's like only for the benefit of the 6-year-old. But the 6-year-old's the first one to say, like, you've told me this 100 times. And then the oldest one's like, yeah, I've heard it 10,000 times.
Yeah, like he literally says it every day. And it's like each kid has been around for that many dinners.
Which is, it's weird because later on, whenever Wyatt sees the gunfight and he comes back from town, his father like has perfect recall of when he gave this specific bad people speech to Wyatt. Well, to Wyatt's older brothers. He's like, yeah, I told your older brothers around your age, so I'm going to tell you now. There's bad people out there, and they're vicious. And if you ever encounter these vicious people, you need to meet them with viciousness steadfastly. You know, be there first. Just, you know, punch first, shoot first, ask questions later. Is kind of what he tells him.
Another lesson he internalizes.
Yes. Now, so then after that, I guess the family, you know, we just glaze over Wyatt's, you know, teenage years, and he's now in his early 20s or something. Okay. This is post-war.
So you say that, but I read the Wikipedia also, and it implies that a lot of what we were seeing, like when he's a wagon driver, he's supposed to still be a teenager.
Okay, but it's Kevin Costner.
Yeah, so that's the thing throughout this movie. Kevin Costner, I think, was about 40 when this was made. Because he's 70 now. This was made around 30 years ago. I mean, maybe he's in his late 30s when this was made. And people keep calling him, like, young man and being like, well, what a fine young boy. It's like, this is an adult man. They, like, try to make him clean-shaven, but he just looks so old. And it's just like, what is happening in this movie that everyone, like, I think this is, like, a passion project for him specifically.
Oh, for Kevin Costner? It's got to be, like, a passion project for somebody involved. I just wasn't sure who.
Yeah, so he was supposed to, like, make Tombstone, which is another Wyatt Earp movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, he decided not to. And made this instead. And it seems like he just really wanted to play Wyatt Earp, but he played him as a teenager for a good portion of this movie. And then in his 20s, when this guy was 40. It looks so goofy throughout the movie, where they're like, oh, what an upstart young man you are.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, they're running away from bandits, and it's Kevin Costner. I didn't realize he was supposed to be a teenager. I mean, is Dutch supposed to also be a teenager? His compadre?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not mentioned.
Yeah.
And this they're just running says away he from... is later a teenaged Wyatt. Is a wagon driver.
Wow. So they're running away from bandits. Is he's doing transportation? That's his business?
I think he's hauling... Yeah, he's hauling cargo, I think.
Yeah. And this guy, Dutch, his good friend and the only other person on the cart, is lying prone on top of the stuff in the back with a rifle. And he's shooting at the horses and other individuals chasing them. And he just hits nothing. Like, he fires 12 shots in their general direction. It doesn't hit a single person or horse with a rifle lying prone. It was impressive. And I get that, like, it's probably a bumpy ride as you're full steam ahead, but it's crazy. Like, he never stopped sending shots downrange, nor did they. And they didn't hit anything. He didn't hit anything. It was crazy.
It's like, have you ever seen, did you see the newest Jurassic Park?
No.
Jurassic Park Rebirth, I think, or Jurassic World, whatever it is. But there's a scene where they have, like, the Mosasaur. Do you know that one?
Mm-mm.
It's, like, the giant, like, water one.
Okay.
With, like, the huge mouth. It's the size of a humpback whale. Okay? And all right. At some point, they're in a boat, you know, maybe a, like, a 30-foot boat or whatever. Like, a standard, I don't know, they're on, like, an expedition. And, like, one of the objectives is to, like, shoot the thing and, like, extract its blood. So, like, this whale is, like, right alongside the boat the whole time. And, like, the guy's about to shoot it, and then Scarlett Johansson is like, no, let me do it. I was in special forces. Have you even shot a gun? It's like, you're trying to shoot this, like, very giant animal. It's like, you can't hit anything. Like, I understand, like, in this one, the wagon is bumpy and the ocean was bumpy. But it's just like, if you're shooting in the direction a couple times, like, you can't hit a horse. It's only like, he could have hit, like, one of those guys. It wasn't like he was aiming for a specific guy, you know?
Yeah, because there's been collateral damage. Could have missed the first three guys and still hit the fourth guy.
And this is, like, his job. He's like, it's not like he's never seen a gun before. I don't know. None of these people seem to be able to shoot, except when they need to be. So,
yeah. And this is late 1800s, so I think, like, guns were decent at this point. You know, it's not like they were wholly inaccurate, like muskets.
Yeah, this isn't Revolutionary War, this is Civil War.
Yeah. So anyway, they successfully evade the bandits, they get to town, and I don't know. This is when it first dawned on me, like, how do people tell each other apart in this time? Because the cast list is long, the extra list is incredibly long, and they somehow found, like, I don't know, 300 people that look identical.
Yeah, including all the main characters, who are mostly, like, 40-year-old white men, I couldn't tell any of them apart.
It's and I understand really
that's,
tough.
Like, a personal failing I have. But there were several scenes where they're like, you're Wyatt Earp. And I was like, he is? Like, I thought this was a different guy. And then there's a scene later when I think, skipping ahead, but I think Ed dies, right?
Yeah.
Ed dies, and he's like the sheriff. I didn't know that was
Him. I assumed it was Wyatt Earp who got shot. And then he died, and I was like, oh, that's a weird, like, a weird direction for this to go. And it was like, oh, no, it's a different guy. And I'm sure these men do look different. Why? Kevin Costner has this, like, goofy haircut the whole time. We'll talk about him as we go, but, like, yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell anyone apart. That definitely affected my enjoyment of the movie.
Yeah, especially, like, they're somehow able to identify people at great distances at night while raining. And they have, like, trench coats on with the hood up and a brimmed hat covering half their face. And they're like, I know exactly who that is from 40 yards away. And it's just like, really? How? It's a fucking bearded asshole that's dressed exactly the same as everyone else in this town. How are you identifying this? And it's just like,
half of these seem like people they've never met before. And they're like, I know you by reputation. It's like, how do you also know his appearance, though? Like, you know, it's like it's a white guy with a mustache. And they're like, yep, I know the guy. I'll know him when I see him.
Yeah. So anyway, they're back in town with a bunch of twins. And yeah, he's apparently set to referee another boxing match, which is something he dabbles in when he's not transporting goods. And yeah, he has to stop the fight early. Because one guy was getting his ass kicked, and this pissed off guy who was gambling on the match, named Ed Ross, which led to the next scene where they're in a... Is this a brothel slash bar? I don't... It's tough. Are they the same business? Or is it just, like, a bar that has a bunch of hookers that frequent it?
Yeah, I think the hookers just hang around the bar.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's also... gambling, like he's playing Faro. He's just fascinated by Faro, which I don't know how to play, but it doesn't matter. So then Taya Leone is the whore trying to seduce him and take him upstairs, right, as whores do. And I guess somebody comes over to him and says, hey, your Fuddy Dutch is saying that you're pissed off at Ed Ross, and you're going to fight him. And I don't know, within like 30 seconds, Ed Ross shows up. I guess word travels fast, or maybe the message was delivered to Wyatt late. So Ed Ross shows up at the bar and he just says Wyatt Earp out loud. And this causes everyone in the bar to go completely silent and clear out and clear a path directly to Wyatt Earp, whom everyone knows, which is weird because he's just this like transportation punk. But anyway, yeah, so. Ed Ross is gonna kill him, and he's like squaring off with the dude. And Wyatt Earp, I guess this is, he's channeling his father's viciousness speech, and he takes a pool ball and throws it at Ed Ross's throat, which incapacitates him, and he's like kneeling on the ground, leaning on the bar, you know, just completely thwarted by a billiard ball. And we get a scene where Kevin Costner goes over and takes his gun and then gives a weird speech to the bar. And he says, this man intended me harm, you know, but he lost and I'm taking his gun. And it's just like a weird, I think the movie's doing it for our benefit, but it's just weird because it doesn't make any sense. Like you could just not take his gun and I wouldn't care. You don't have to take his gun. How do I benefit?
Yeah, he acted like he was doing them all. I mean, that's one of the things with a lot of the law enforcement in this. It's like some guys will be drunk, roll into town, appear to be causing, like, no trouble, really. You know? And then...
They have guns? And that's the problem?
They have guns. Like, the potential for trouble. And, you know, you get it. And it's like, fine. Like, they don't want to have guns because there's been trouble. But you very rarely, like, see any of the trouble until, like, they're confronted by the lawmen, and then there's, like, a confrontation, and they start shooting each other. There's a scene later on where the lady's like, I think Doc Holliday says to maybe Bat Masterson, right?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you shot, I don't know, Buffalo Bill or whoever the hell it is. And, you know, that guy is a real jackass. I'm glad you shot him. And the lady's like, yeah, if only you had shot him before he killed that girl, Betsy, whatever. And you're like, this is the first time I'm hearing of like a guy actually doing something bad rather than just like being killed because he refused to give up his gun. And then like, you know, the confrontation escalated. I don't know.
I guess from this, we're supposed to take that people were wily, there was capacity for viciousness, and that, you know, gunfire was at constant risk, and that's why he needed to become a lawman to try to restore order to these towns that are just full of, you know, drunk, crazed individuals, just lunatics, right? Is that what we're supposed to gather?
Yeah, it seems like there was the potential for violence with these, like, bar fights, I guess. But, like, he initiates a lot of the violence in this movie.
That he does. He's got to meet viciousness with viciousness first. He's got to shoot first, ask questions later.
I guess we... And, like, this movie basically has him... Like, we see him working so many different jobs for some reason. And not in, like, montage like you might see in some other shorter movies. It's like, we'll see, like, a montage of his, like, coming up as a lawman, but it's, like, 15-minute scenes of him, like, working as a sheriff in this town, and they're like, I'd like you to work in this town instead, and he's like, okay, and then he, like, moves, and you're like, okay, surely this will be the movie, and it's like, nope, he actually has to move again, and he, at some point, he's like, I worked the train, and we're like, oh, that's the one we didn't see, like, when he was catching train robbers, it's just, I don't know. We see so much of this movie, and you keep being like, "This is this the plot now?" And it's like, no, none of this is the plot.
I don't know that it has a set plot, and that's part of the problem, which we'll get to.
So, it's sort of like it was a faithful adaptation of his biography, and they were instructed just not to leave any of it out.
Yes.
Like, it was just like, it was like if you were reading someone's Wikipedia, and it just like, you know, when it mentions like, you know, he had previously worked as a lawman in Dodge City. And they're like, I guess we have to include that for some reason. You know, and they're like, what do we have to say about that? It's like, nothing. Just like, we got to show it, though. Like, every sentence had to have its own little sub, not even plot, like a sequence of scenes, I guess. I don't even know.
Yeah, it's so, not even a subplot. It's just facts about his life, a depiction of his life. And
Yeah.
So anyway, after he defeats Ed Ross, he sees a fireworks show with Jorge Taglioni, and I don't know. Is this where he gets a fascination with guns? Maybe we just see that he starts drawing the weapon over and over and like pointing it at the fireworks, and it's like the first time he's held a gun. I don't get it. He wasn't anti-gun before this. I mean, as a teenager, he was. Destiny, he was eager to be in the Civil War Civil War. So like he has been around guns this whole time. I don't know why he chooses this fireworks show to like bring out the gun, but I think this is a turning point in his life where he is going to be, you know, this is a precursor to being a lawman. You have to love guns. I don't know.
Yeah. Cause he's supposed to be like a gunslinger, I guess is his like, what he was known for, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a passing interest he has. He picked up on this random night.
Yeah. Well, he shoos away Taglioni, her advances, which is crazy. But he says it's because he has a beautiful wife back home who he has seen on 3 occasions. I think he's made eye contact, I guess, 3 times, and nothing happened the first 2. But the 3rd time, this person with whom he made eye contact smiled. And that is enough for him to say that that's going to be his wife. And that's his wife, Urilla? I don't know.
He made it sound like they were like a lot more serious than they were. Like, he said it's like, my love is promised to another. And it's like, is it though? Like, because he goes back and proposes to her.
Daily.
But it didn't seem... Yeah, but it didn't seem like he could have just walked away from that. It didn't seem like she'd be sitting there waiting for him. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he didn't give her a promise ring or anything. I doubt she knew that he had these intentions because I don't think they'd spoken a word. And it was crazy because if he's willing to, you know, dismiss Taglioni, who's, you know, pursuing him, in favor of Urilla, Urilla better be just a total smoke show. And this is where the movie made its first casting mistake, I think. Because
you think it was with a 40-year-old Kevin Costner?
I mean, maybe. Yeah. So, yeah. Urilla should be just, I don't know, should have gotten a model for how little of a role she plays in the movie. Like, first, she doesn't need to be in the movie, right? It's not important. But then if you're gonna have her and you're gonna, like, have this be the reason he is on the straight and narrow while in, I don't even know what fucking city he's in, Dodge, Wichita, who gives a shit? At least have her be, you know, a perfect 10. And it's just this homely looking lady who I don't think is a famous actress.
I don't know if she's a homely looking lady.
It's just like, it's not a goddess, and she should have been a goddess, you know? Like, she should have been really, really good looking. And maybe this is just something that is a faithful adaptation of the past. Maybe this is someone who looks like Urilla did, or this is what was considered beautiful for the time. I don't know, but they could have modernized that and it would have made the movie better, you know, by putting like a supermodel in place, because she's literally in the movie for like 8 minutes. It's just enough for him to go back home to Lamar, Missouri, you know, propose to this girl daily, get married, start a little farm, and then she gets sick. It's literally the passage of time is her looking out the window and it's winter, and then the window changes to spring, and then she gets typhoid and fucking dies with child. And that's the extent of her in the movie.
Yeah, like, he had to go back, I guess, just have a wife who died, because later he gets into like an argument and says, like, wives come and go. You know, they run off or they die, so, like, I don't know, you had to be comfortable with the, he's just like, that's why he doesn't regard, like, when he votes to move this family to wherever, he says the women don't get to vote because, you know, wives come and go. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the problem was she wasn't attractive enough. But yeah, she didn't really need to be in the movie.
Yeah.
Because the movie doesn't care about her at all.
No. I mean, tragic nonetheless, and it causes him to just sort of spin out of control. His solution to this is to get really, really drunk and then burn the house down. He literally Molotovs his house. And instead of selling it, I guess maybe they didn't sell houses back then.
Yeah, again, the houses just have no value in this time, because it feels like it'd be very difficult to build a house in these times that, like, function at all. But these people just up and leave them, or burn them down, or just don't give a shit about them at all.
Yeah, not sure. He burns down his house with all of its possessions, and I'm not sure what city he finds himself in, but he's like a bum, a drunk. He's sleeping in a stable, and he gets kicked out. Does he punch the stable owner? And then he sees a horse and he commits Grand Theft Auto 1870 style. And he steals said horse, sells said horse to the chop shop. Despite the fact that the risk is that he'll be hanged if he's caught.
Yeah, they're very punitive in this term.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine if the the penalty for Grand Theft Auto was you get to be hanged? Oh my god, that'd be great. Anyway, so yeah, his father comes to town and bails him out of jail. So now he's like, he's free, but his father lets him know, hey, you can't show up to your court date, because if you do, then you'll be convicted and they'll kill you. So I can never see you again. You can never come back to this town again. And you're a fugitive now on the run. You can never come back here. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, everything that we know, or that I knew about Wyatt Earp, is that he was a lawman. But how can that be true if he's also a fugitive? Like, he has warrants out for his arrest? So is this just like, is Wyatt Earp the first person to have really, really good PR?
Well, so reading more about him, apparently, like, I think this, the newspapers, like, presented him pretty negatively. I guess it was sort of a mixed bag with him. I think he just sort of, like, became a legend. Don't even think I really knew anything about him before this. Just that he was, like, a gunfighter of some kind. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like... It seems like maybe the news just hadn't reached wherever. He just, like, wasn't a big deal. You know?
Yeah. So, anyway, so he's on the run, and this is the last time we see Gene Hackman, which is fine. He didn't need to be in the movie either. So, yeah, Wyatt Earp goes west to become a buffalo skinner. And yeah,
also, Gene Hackman's, like, third build in this movie and is in for maybe 5 minutes total of a 190-minute movie.
Yeah, but I guess he gives three important speeches, which is nothing counts so much as blood. Meet viciousness with viciousness first. And, you know, I'll never see you again. Don't come back here. And that's about all he says. So yeah, he goes to skin buffalo in the plains. I'm not sure what town he's in, but he does it himself, and he comes to town with a haul of pelts. And he's getting eyeballed by these two guys, Ed and Bat Masterson. And, like, they spot him, and they're like, hey, come over here. You know, I got eyes on this guy. I think he's the one. And I don't know, it just sort of felt like they were criminals looking to rob somebody, and they were looking for a sucker, like a target, and they were like, hey, I found a mark over here. He's a guy coming back solo with a bunch of pelts. Let's go fucking kill him, steal his pelts, and leave him for dead. And then we'll, you know, we'll have all that money.
But
that's not what their intention was. Instead, their intention was to ask him for a job. But still, you're just, like, wary of these two, given the first time you saw them on screen. So you're like, okay, they're going to go, you know, skin buffalo with him and then leave him for dead whenever they get back to town. And be like, oh, you know, if skinners die out there, then so could the guy employing the skinners. So, like, it still felt like a con, and they were just buttering him up.
That's what he said, right? That his skinners had died?
Yeah, whenever they're asking him for a job.
They're like, I noticed you don't have any skinners. Also, if you're the skinners, that seems like the hard part. Shooting a buffalo does not seem like the hard part. Like, they call him a buffalo hunter. It's just like, they barely move.
Oh, they don't even, like, move in the face of gunfire.
Yeah, like, they're all just hanging out. So it's like, I don't think you need a third guy. You can just go hunt the buffalo yourself. You know, you can probably just walk right up to them and start skinning.
Yeah, I mean, they're literally posted up on a rock, I don't know, 30 or 40 yards away from these buffalo, and still can't hit anything. But they're, like, actively shooting at these 15 buffalo that are standing there, and the buffalo are just, like, still chomping away at their cud, you know, and then one of them falls over. It doesn't startle any of them. They just keep munching away, and it's just wild. Yeah, so definitely could be done by one person. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. He came back to town with a bunch of pelts. He was just one guy, and his skinners died while out there. Or did he kill them right before he got back?
Yeah, how did they die? Do we
don't know. But, like, Ed Masterson, at whenever he's in the skinning montage, he's, like, really sickened by doing it. I don't know if the pace at which he's skinning is more than he could handle, or if, like, he hadn't done any skinning prior to this. But it seemed weird. Like, this was another thing that made me think they were just looking to con the guy, because he was sincerely looking for work as a skinner, but couldn't stomach it. Like, it just didn't make any sense. So at this point, I was like, okay, this is three things that are making me think, you know, they're definitely going to kill him and leave him for dead and take all his pelts.
Yeah. I don't know. So some of the things just, like, happen because they have to happen in this movie. So, like, when you have these random characters come and they're just, like, part of Wyatt Earp's story, there's no, like, real reason for them to join up with him other than, like, oh, we're the guys who come next in the story. And you're like, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. I guess the movie does have everyone that Wyatt Earp has ever been associated with. So, and it's complete. So yeah, after working as a skinner and building relationships with Ed and Bat, he goes to Wichita to hang with his brother. Is this James? Yeah. Goes with his brother James and James's whore wife, which Wyatt doesn't approve of. I think Wyatt gets woken up early morning and gets deputized in 3 seconds because there was a drunk shooting up a saloon, and he goes in and sort of gives him the business and takes his guns.
Yeah, I at first I thought the guy was shooting at him because a bullet comes through his window. But it turns out the guy was just wildly shooting out of the ball window, and it just happened to go through Wyatt Earp's window.
Yeah, so this is clearly a drunk that's having like a mental breakdown inside of a bar at 8 a.m. But Wyatt Earp goes in and handles it, and then the mayor sees this and just like really awkwardly puts a badge on his chest and says...
Well, because the deputy or whoever was supposed to do it just sort of quits.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a raging lunatic drunk in a bar shooting guns. So it's like, just give it like 15 minutes, he's going to shoot all his guns, you know? He doesn't have an infinite supply of ammo, does he? And who's still serving him?
Yeah.
But anyway...
I mean, he's at some point someone's like, there's no one... I guess he's just getting his own stuff, because Wyatt Earp goes and is like, there's no one else in there.
Yeah. So anyway, this is his start as a lawman in Wichita, I guess. And boy, Wyatt Earp, he makes arrests by any means necessary. I mean, we get a montage. He's like biting people, ripping their mouths, just being really aggressive, being vicious with these vicious, you know, animals, these heathens. And we learn that he gets $2.50 for every arrest. And that in 1 month, he cleared $1,000. So it just feels like maybe it's a broken system and he's incentivized to just arrest people for no good reason.
Yeah, it's like when they criticize like cops for having like ticket quotas. But it's like now he's explicitly paid to arrest people. And he did, I think they said he made $1,000 in a month.
Yeah.
So did he make 400 arrests in a month?
I think so, yeah.
That's like 13 a day.
How is the jail that big, you know?
If you're working every day, and it's like, how do you even have time to do that? Like, even if you work all day, can you arrest more than like one guy an hour? Like, don't you have to bring him back to jail? Or are you just like running back and forth from the jail and then like outside? Like,
there must not have been as much paperwork back then, you know. Definitely I don't have to write citations. You just sort of hit them on the head and throw them in jail, get their name, and then you know, collect your $2.50, which is, I don't know, good for Wyatt. He definitely took advantage of the system. But he got a reputation that he is a bit, you know, abusive and abuses his authority, and I guess this is just an instance of police brutality. But yeah, I mean, he's literally incentivized to do it, so why wouldn't he?
I mean, he does.
Yep. So anyway, we meet James, and I thought this was important to mention because Wyatt takes a real anti-whore stance with his brother's wife. He like condemns the fact that his brother's dating a whore. But then like in short order, literally a couple scenes later, he's banging Maddie the whore in maybe a different city. And he decides to like start casually dating her. So I thought that was weird. He sort of did a 180 there. Maybe his brother did some more convincing in Wichita that he's like, nah, these whores are where it's at. Sometimes I can convince them to cook and clean too.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems like real skeeved out by it, but. I don't know. I don't know how he feels about women in general. He sort of just occasionally sees women and then they're in a relationship and then sometimes they're not. Like, there's no situation where he, like, likes any of them. I don't know.
So is he like, is this supposed to play into the people who are looking for a romantic? You know, his one true love, his Urilla died, and therefore he can't love again? Like, is that a contributing, like, is that part of his character?
I don't know if he, like, as a character in this movie, he just doesn't seem like, I mean, listen, the acting in this movie seems so bad that it's just like, it's hard, like, the line deliveries are so stilted that I just, like, cannot understand what the hell's going on. Like, as if it's like a bit, like, Kevin Costner delivers these lines, I don't know, it's just so slow. Like, there's so much, like, so much of this movie could be cut down to 2 hours if you just cut out, like, the weird, awkward spacing in between each line. I'm trying to figure, like, what it's delivered like. It's no, at first I thought it was, like, a play, but it's, like, no one's ever, like, talking over each other. It's just, there's, like, so much room in between anything, and everything's, like, this, like, weird formal thing, which you sort of understand when he's supposed to be, like, a young guy talking to older people, even though, again, he's a 40-year-old man talking to other 40-year-old men, but they all, you know, saying their different ages. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Throughout this whole movie, I don't know. So I don't know, like, what character Wyatt Earp, like, the character in the movie has versus just, like, this is his biography of, like, what he did, you know?
Yeah, it's unclear, but the dialogue is clunky. I mean, it's nearly as clunky as, what was that, Sin City? No, what did we watch that black and white movie with Robbie? The Spirit. Oh my god, yeah, it was almost as clunky as that. I mean,
but that was, like, stylized.
Yeah.
Like, that was going for something. This doesn't appear to be going for anything specific.
No. Whenever they're talking about Ed Masterson in the city that he left becoming the sheriff, he's like, oh, what's Ed like? Because he's meeting the bartender. And his delivery is, he's affable. Very affable. But he doesn't do it with any intonation. He does it just completely flat. And it made me wonder, like, why is Kevin Costner famous? He's not compelling in this role. I mean, everything he says is terrible. And then whenever they meet Doc Holliday, played by Dennis Quaid, I understand that the character of Doc Holliday was a bit kooky, but Dennis Quaid looks, like, pained to be delivering these lines. It's like Dennis Quaid had the wherewithal to understand that the script was dog shit, and he's, like, regretful of his decision to be affiliated with this movie as he's sitting there on set acting. And I don't know if, like, this is the sixth time he's done it. And they're like, no, quit acting so good. You need to be more, like, terrible and flat and boring.
You need to
more. And he's just, like, fed up with the directing, and he's like, fuck this movie. You know, he just doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, I feel like when you think of, like, cowboys and outlaws and all this stuff, you think of, like, larger than life fun characters, and, like, none of this is that. Like, none of this is fun.
No, they're just so goddamn boring. Yeah. So anyway, Ed's affability proves ineffective, and I guess his policing style leads to his death. But speaking of Dennis Quaid playing Doc Holliday, why did they make him...
Did his style lead to his death? Because, like, he goes and, like, tries to take some people's guns away, and does, and then they just end up shooting him anyways?
Yeah, what he needed to do was smack them in the head, you know, bludgeon them to death, rip them, rip their mouth away from them, you know, and throw them in the drunk tank.
At this point, they hadn't done anything. They're just like, they just show up and they're like, oh, we're in town. He's like, yeah, you can't have guns in town. Just give up your guns and then you can enjoy the party. And they're like, okay. And then they end up killing him, you know, later that day.
Yeah. If only Ed Masterson had gotten a, you know, pep talk from his father to say, you need to meet viciousness with viciousness, he'd have just bludgeon them to death, and he wouldn't have had to worry about it, and it'd still be around. Too affable.
Yeah. Like, they use affable like it's code for something, too.
It did seem that way. I don't know why he said it like six times.
Like, he's real affable. And you're like, yeah? And they're like, he's just so affable. Like, I get that they're trying, it seems like they're trying to call him like a pussy. Or like, I don't know, but they just keeps it like, he doesn't just like expand on it at all. He just keeps saying he's affable.
Yeah, it's to the point where I don't know if like the person who directed that day or that wrote that part of the script, just like, I don't know, they had a calendar with a word of the day and they were like, let's try to pepper this in as many times as possible.
It's like one of those SAT study calendars.
Yeah. So Dennis Quaid, like playing Doc Holliday, that's fine. But the costuming was awful. Why did they make him wear sunglasses indoors? He looks like Dr. Loveless from Wild Wild West. Like the way he's, and it's just, I know Wild Wild West was after this. But like the choices they made for Dennis Quaid were awful. And I feel bad.
Yeah, I just like genuinely don't understand why none of these characters seem fun at all. You know?
Yeah.
Like this was such like a dreary movie. For like, I don't know. Usually, like, there's, like, an up to the gunslinging and stuff, and it's, like, fun. But this was all just, like, get to the next scene type of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was comprehensive.
It was good.
Unnecessarily. It just didn't need to happen. Like, you could have cut the Masterson brothers out of the whole story. He didn't need to skin Buffalo. That offered nothing. At this point, he's in town with his brothers because nothing counts so much as blood, and the wives, they like stage an intervention to ambush Wyatt and tell him to stop talking about moving the family to Tombstone. I guess maybe now Wyatt is getting dementia and he's now the patriarch that's relocating the family incessantly. But yeah, it doesn't work.
I don't know how he can relocate his brother's family also.
I guess.
You know, he's like, well, I'm moving. And they're like, we don't want to. It's like, he's like, nope, no choice.
Yeah, nothing counts so much as blood. And he's not even the oldest. Like, he's not even the oldest that's alive. But I guess he has the pioneer spirit and everyone else is just like willing to go along with it. I don't know why. Are they protecting Wyatt? It doesn't make sense why they continue to follow him and drag their wives.
Yeah.
But the wives are sick of it. That doesn't change his stance because, as we went over, wives come and go. Especially if you marry whores. Like, I feel like the pool from which you're picking these wives isn't, you know, a good one. You know, maybe you should get some better stock. And maybe then they won't be so fleeting. But anyway, the family gets to Tombstone and they start setting up shop. And he starts hooking up with Jewish actress, Behan's fiance. And I guess we didn't meet Behan before this, played by Mark Harmon. But I guess he's the sheriff, and that's different from the marshal, and I don't know how. And, like, one might be federal, one might be county, who knows. But, yeah, so after this, like, he has whore wife Maddie try to kill herself with some laudanum, apparently, that she got from Chinatown. And that's what, like, one of the other wives said. And my question was, how the fuck is there a Chinatown in Tombstone? Well, because there's, like, hardly a goddamn Tombstone. And earlier, I think in Dodge or Wichita, there was reference to a red light district. And it's just like, traffic lights it's didn't like one exist. Road. There weren't cars. There were thoroughfares for horses.
I don't think that's what a red. I don't think red light district is because of traffic lights. Is it?
Oh, you think it's red lights in the windows for whores?
I thought so.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's weird that these towns have sections rather than because they're like one road. You'd think it'd be like she got it over there, that place inside of us right now. I mean, I think there were a lot of Chinese working on the rails, and that we did see them building a railroad earlier at some point.
Yeah, I guess.
But
And that's where she got the lodge. Yeah,
is Chinatown just like a Chinese guy's house in town?
Maybe.
And there's like a few Chinese people that live
there? Yeah, there's just like a Chinese business and his
Chinese family.
And they you know, have a couple brothers and some wives, and that's just now Chinatown? It's just like, no, just go to, you know, go to Steve's butcher shop or whatever. Like, there's no Chinatown. Get out of here. But yeah, so Maddie attempts suicide with this laudanum. And then Doc Holliday has the bright idea to suggest to Wyatt that he should kill Maddie so that he could stay with his Jew whore, as Maddie puts it. But it was confusing because Maddie is a whore. So how could she take issue with the Jewish actress and call her a whore? It just feels like the pot calling the kettle black. So that didn't really make sense there. Anything else during all these adventures that I'm glossing over that you wanted to mention?
No, because again, they're like thoroughly uninteresting. And he's just acting with such like a joylessness.
Yeah, that like it's like he was obligated to do this.
Yeah, this movie, which I think he really wanted to do.
Yeah, that's crazy. So anyway, the movie climaxes with the shootout at the OK Corral, right? And Ike Clanton and, I don't know, Tom McCleary and some other assholes, they're just, like, causing trouble in Tombstone. And he and Virgil and I think Morgan at the time were the law in Tombstone. And, you know, the policy was you got to check in your guns. You got to, like, I don't know, coat check your guns at the town entrance. You can't have them in town. And there were some violators of this policy that are part of, like, I don't know. Are they outlaw gangs that are just...
I think they're, like, the cowboy gang is what they're called.
Yeah, they're just, like, bandits. I don't know. Are they stagecoach robbers? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't really know the crimes exactly.
Yeah, but I mean they're the Hell's Angels, I guess, criminal organization. And they have guns in town, and that's not allowed. So they go to disarm them. And this is actually the opening scene of the movie. We see like Kevin Costner sitting there smoking a cigar, drinking coffee. And somebody comes in and tells him, hey, they're, you know, they've got guns over there at the OK Corral. And he's like, all right, let's go get those guns. And this is like what Wyatt Earp is most known for. This is the pinnacle of Wyatt Earp's existence, is whenever the time he, Doc Holliday, Virgil and James, or Virgil and Morgan, disarmed like three thugs behind a OK Corral. And I guess there's controversy surrounding what happened. Right? Because maybe they shot first. Maybe they didn't need to disarm them. Was it an assassination? Who knows? I think that's what this is. This is like the first incident that had huge conspiracy theories behind it. And you had people that were big advocates of Wyatt Earp that were probably, you know, looking at this event through rose-colored glasses. And they were like, oh, yeah, the other people drew first. So I guess it's up in the air as to whether Wyatt Earp was correct in this regard. I don't know if there's any scholars that really know whether or not. If this is a true adaptation and a faithful adaptation of his life, then it seems they were somewhat justified, right?
Yeah, I guess the thing is, like, you're just not allowed to have any kind of weapons. I mean, they're just making they just, like, decide the law sort of... as they go. They're like, Wyatt Earp, I want you to be the sheriff in town. And then he just makes laws, sort of. Like, he just says them. So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, but this scene is the climax of the movie. And after the shootout, when his enemies and friends are bleeding out, you just see, like, Kevin Costner on screen for 10 seconds. And he has a look of nothing on his face. Like, it's not panic. It's not alertness. He's just like calmly scanning the area, just taking it all in, almost as if he's like, I'm going to want to remember this. And as the viewer of the movie, you're like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, why is he not?
This is going in my biography.
It's like, Why are we just staring at his face? There's no expression. It's just Kevin Costner in a costume. And he's not doing anything other than he has his eyes open. So, yeah.
There's like a real joylessness through the acting in this movie. And like, it's very like blank and stoic in a lot of it. When it doesn't seem like it needs, because this guy's kind of like a hothead too. So it's weird that like anytime they're like, can you do some acting? He's just like, I just sort of stand here and look at things. And you're like, yeah, no, but like, that's not going to hold people's attention for 3 hours. And he's like, what can
Yeah, it's pretty tough. So, I mean, that's basically the end of the movie. There is one more scene. They kill some of the bandits. They ambush them at a train station. I don't know. It's unimportant. But yeah, so then like 20 years later, he's married to the Jewish actress. They're on a ferry in Alaska. And a kid that's probably 15 years old, he recognizes Wyatt and goes over to him and says, are you Wyatt Earp? And the guy says, or Wyatt's like, yeah, I am. And he's like, oh yeah, I recognize you. You helped my father like 30 years ago, 15 years, you know, before I was born. And he's just like, I want to thank you. And he was telling me a story or something. And it's just like, I think you alluded to this earlier. This kid has no idea what Wyatt Earp looks like. How the fuck does he recognize him on a boat 20 years later? Everyone looks the same. Yeah. Everyone looks the same in this movie. There's no way you pick Wyatt Earp out of a lineup. It's crazy.
Especially not enough to like approach him in public and be like, get up.
Yeah. So then, you know, we get the Jewish actress, Josie. She like looks at him. And Wyatt's like, oh yeah, some people say it didn't happen that way. And her response is, never mind them, Wyatt, it happened that way. So it kind of leaves you on a note of, is any of this true? Was the shootout at the OK Corral like something that was an abuse of power? Was it police brutality? Was it, should it not have happened? Why is there controversy toward this? It didn't leave us feeling like Wyatt Earp was the hero of this movie, even though we just spent 3 hours and 8 minutes fucking painstakingly going through every fucking aspect of his life.
Yeah, so I think it's more that, like, the idea was that they provoked the shootout, not that they, like that they could have avoided it rather than that they did anything, like, wrong, per se.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah. Could be. So yeah, I mean, we've touched on the acting being flat, the script and the dialogue being clunky, the costuming just being, I don't know, give somebody some distinguishing fucking features or, you know, everyone had a mustache at the same time in the movie and you're just like, okay, I need to refigure out who the fuck I'm looking at. You know, everyone had the same hat, which was terrible. None of the outfits were cool. I think the casting, tragically bad. It's not that Dennis Quaid was bad as Doc Holliday, but yeah, like Urilla should have been somebody who's much prettier. Like switch Taya Leone and put her as Urilla. That would have made more sense. Yeah, I didn't like the music. So at some point in the movie, I was like, it felt like Dune. It felt like we're just going to show the Great American Plains for long periods of time on the screen. And we're going to show buffalo and it's going to be cool. We're going to have a seagull or a bald eagle fly across the screen. And it's just going to be like a majestic thing. And we're going to play music over it. And that's like a healthy portion of the middle of this movie that you could completely cut. I'd say the directing was awful because, I don't know, it's hard to direct a plotless movie. But yeah, there was very little character development outside of Wyatt, I guess. But I will say the lighting was largely fine.
See everything?
I could see most things, yeah, except for whenever they were identifying people from 40 yards away in pitch black with a hat on and trench coat pulled up. Yeah, I don't know how they did that. Maybe their vision was much better. But yeah, I'd say the lighting was fine.
So well lit. I guess we're at the end, but yes. This movie I thought was pretty bad. Nothing really interesting happens. Like, for something that just should be, like, Palkoli is usually, like, cool and fun.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, when you hear Gunslinger, it's, like, usually, like, I don't know, it seems like high energy, like, he's sort of a loose cannon, but in, like, an unpleasant, boring way. Like, he's just gonna joylessly do random things at random times, but not, like, be a loose cannon, like, he could do anything, like, wacky. It's mostly just, like, he starts fights, and, like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I was not a fan of this.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know why Kevin Costner wanted to do this, because he doesn't seem like he wanted to do it.
He had a hand in writing, you know? I don't know. Maybe it was like a sinking ship. Maybe Kevin Costner's involvement is what caused it to go downhill. And that's why Dennis Quaid was like, oh my god, Kevin Costner's fucking this whole thing up.
I mean, but yeah, I think Kevin Costner, like, really, like, apparently he, like, tried to sabotage Tombstone, which was, like, the competing movie.
So that's, I read the Wikipedia of this. Because apparently its 3-hour runtime was heavily criticized and it was compared unfavorably to Tombstone. And that's just exactly how I feel, because it didn't need to be this long. If you pared down this movie to the interesting parts, or the parts that could be interesting, gave the costume a rework, you know, had better casting, better writing, and just made people have fun and be cooler, you would get the 1993 Tombstone. And that's like top 10 movies all time, in my opinion.
I've never seen
it. Oh, yeah, which is why I was willing to watch this one. And then it just, I don't know if watching Tombstone ruined this. There's a chance that there's a little bit of bias there. But, like, even in a vacuum, this movie, nephew, you know? Not good. Terrible.
So, like, Tombstone is, like, closer to just about the OK Corral, though, right?
Yes, because it only takes place in Tombstone. It doesn't waste the first hour and 45 minutes going through Wyatt Earp's fucking marriage to a lady that never shows up again, you know. You still get that he's a pioneer, that he's a lawman, that he's a badass. And they just do it in 5 minutes, and it's much better. And it came out 6 months before this movie, so it's just like, you really wanted to explore that?
Yeah, and Tombstone is also, like, a 2-hour movie. It's not like it's a short movie. And it's just about the part when they're in Tombstone. This movie just had, like, 5 other towns beforehand. They, like, establish some things about his character, but you can establish people's character while the plot is happening. It's more like this movie decided to completely separate those two things and have, like, a whole, this is this guy's character, which, again, did not matter. Because it wasn't like that. It was mostly just, this is his backstory. Not like, these are the things that made him who he is, so much as, like, his father gave him a couple speeches. Like, if he just had, like, a little notebook with, like, the 5 things his father used to say, and then he showed up in Tombstone, I feel like we would have got most of what we got from the first hour and a half of this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, so, I didn't really like it. To be honest, thought it was a bad movie.
What was its plot? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's not.
It was just so, it was like a mini series. But, like, even then, like, not, like, jumping, like, the time skips would never happen. You know?
Yeah, why did they choose these components of Wyatt Earp's life? They just.
It was almost like.
They weren't important. They weren't relevant to who Wyatt Earp was, you know, a lot of them.
It's almost like a mini series where, like, the guy goes into a new town each week and, like, solves that town's problems with his I don't know, justice, like as a gunslinging justice, and then goes to get a different job.
Yeah.
But, like, instead, it was just one movie where that happened, where he just went, like, it's just a guy who can't hold down a job. And then, like, it's weird for this guy to be, like, the violent, like, you know, sort of cowboy cop type thing, I guess is, like, what you'd call it. Because he's just, like, so passionless for so much of this movie. Like, everything's just delivered so dryly that when he's, like, you know, the one who's just, like, popping off and, like, beating everybody up for no reason, you're just like, why is he... Like, doesn't seem like he cares about any of this. You know? Doesn't seem like he cares about the money. Doesn't seem like he cares about the law. You know what I mean? When they're like, you could make more money doing this. And he's like, okay, I guess so.
Yeah.
Like, it's unclear what this character likes at all, except his family, who, like, I guess is mostly destroyed through this process. Which I guess maybe is part of the point, but also, I don't know.
I thought just Morgan died. I thought Virgil survived. He got shot.
Yeah, but he's, like, heavily wounded, and all the wives are angry all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Although, but I guess he stayed with his wife, Josie, for the rest of his life. So, I don't know. That was a stable relationship. That was sort of surprising.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, pretty bad. Definitely a nephew.
Definitely.
I'd say. The movie shouldn't be 3 hours long. That's two movies worth of movie.
Yeah.
And this was not two movies worth of plot.
Now, if you want to watch what this movie should have been, you should watch the 1993 Tombstone. Everything about it is just so much better. Highly recommend that one.
Well, if only you had recommended it to me.
Instead of this movie. Now. No.
It's too late now. I have no interest in the subject matter anymore. This has killed my interest in the subject.
I'm curious if you will revere Tombstone as much as I do, even having seen
probably
this one.
Not.
I think this movie ruined Tombstone for you.
Unless we get to, like, a tanks pick episode again, you know, where, like, you have complete carte blanche. I can't imagine ever watching Tombstone, because...
Oh, that's a shame. Doc Holliday in that movie, played by Val Kilmer, is the coolest character of any movie I've seen.
Yeah, and in this, it's just, like, he's just nothing. He just sort of talks like he's like a dentist. Talks like a weirdo. I forget who it's like trying to remind me of. I don't know. Nothing's good in this. Most of the actors don't even seem like they're doing a bad job. It's just that the dialogue is so, like, if you watch the first couple of, I don't know, you know, exactly what scene it is, but the one where they're on, where are they? Where they're at the dinner table, like just the whole family.
Yeah.
And like every actor around the dinner table is just giving the weirdest, like, line delivery. Like, the most, like, weirdly stilted, like, who knows what the hell is going on in this line delivery. To the point where you're like, this must be intentional. Like, it's not like every one of these actors is intentionally doing a bad job, but that's how it ended up.
Is that how they spoke back then? Like, do we have video footage of people interacting back then, and this is how goddamn awkward they were?
I don't know, but also, who cares? Like, make the movie entertaining?
Just make it modern. Modernize it. You're making a movie in the 90s. Movies didn't exist back then. It's like, fucking just do it how we do it today. You know? Make it entertaining. Give us a plot.
Yeah, don't make a bad movie and be like, that's how it was. All the movies were bad. It's like,
it's fucking falling on deaf ears.
Like, don't make a biography of the guy and be like, I don't know what to tell you. His life was boring. It's like, don't make the movie then. Like, no one told you.
This wasn't on the History Channel. This was in theaters. This was made for entertainment, not made for, like, historical accuracy. So it's just like, if you want to be historically accurate, that's fine, but make it palatable. Yikes. Well, it got 6.7 on IMDb, which I'm surprised it's that high. 31% on Rotten Tomatoes, so yeah, not great.
Well, what do we get next week?
Yeah, we might have the incredible Burt Wonderstone.
There's
a secret episode floating around. Yeah, so maybe Crossroads we'll get
a couple,
to.
I think we might revisit some rom-coms, too. I get a couple.
Oh, yeah. I was watching the movie Nonas. You ever seen that? 2025 Vince Vaughn?
With Vince Vaughn and the grandmothers?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
Maybe we'll do that one. All right. Well, is that all we got for this one?
I think so.
All righty. Fwiff, 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 fwiff.